Welcome to the Perry Johnson Registrars Podcast, where you can expect the latest news and discussions related to the management systems certification industry. Today's episode is a previously recorded webinar. If you would like to tune in to our upcoming webinars, visit our website at www.pjr.com/webinar or give us a follow on your favorite podcast app. Thank you for tuning in.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the second installment in PJR's Office Hour series. This session is focused on the EHS standards that PJR offers. My name's Amy. I'm a member of the marketing department for the Perry Johnson Companies, and I'm going to be helping moderate the session along with our subject matter expert today, Austin Matthews. Austin, welcome to the webinar, and thank you so much for taking the time to prepare this webinar and be here to answer all these questions we're going to have today.
Thanks, Amy. I'm excited to be here.
Perfect. Austin is our EHS program manager, and she is a fantastic resource for all of your EHS questions. But all right, let's go ahead and get started. Now, Austin, as you mentioned, you wanted to go over some of the accredited EHS standards that PJR offers. And I have to admit, when I first joined PJR about, 6 years ago now, EHS standards confused me so much. I could not tell the difference between them. So why don't you talk about each of them and how they're similar and different from each other?
No problem. So I'm just going to really, really briefly introduce all of these, and then we'll get to any questions you guys might have, and we'll spend the time where you guys would like to spend the time. So ISO 14001:2015 is an environmental management system standard. It's exactly what it sounds like. It's one of the ISO standards, and it focuses on environmental. If any of you are familiar with ISO 9001:2015, it is very similar. The structure for the ISO standards is almost identical. They all follow the Annex SL structure, but ISO 14001 has an emphasis specifically on environmental. Next on the list is ISO 45001:2018. And again, we see that same ISO structure similar to ISO 9001. This standard, unlike 14001, focuses exclusively on occupational health and safety. So we've got the environmental covered in 14001, and 45001 focuses on OHS or occupational health and safety. Combined, you've got the environmental and the health and safety requirements covered. RIOS 2016 has its own format. It's not an ISO standard. It doesn't match that Annex SL structure, but RIOS covers quality, environmental, and health and safety requirements. So RIOS is specifically focused on recycling. Recycling is a broad industry. It's not restricted to electronics recycling like the rest of the standards that we will look at on this slide, but RIOS encompasses, as I mentioned, quality, environmental, and health and safety all in one, so that makes RIOS a bit unique. R2 2013 is almost finished. We are nearing the end of the transition period, so we won't spend a lot of time on that standard unless you have specific questions, but it is still a standard to which we are accredited for those clients that were maintaining their certification while they prepared to transition. We don't offer new certifications to R2 2013 any longer, but that is an electronics recycling standard that focuses on data security, reuse, responsible recycling, a number of different topics, as does its subsequent version, R2V3. R2V3 is, again, a responsible recycling standard that focuses on a number of factors for electronics recycling, how the data is managed, how the electronics are reused or repaired or refurbished, if at all possible, to minimize the amount of recycling of those devices or components. And as I mentioned, we're nearing the transition period, the transition deadline, I should say, for clients to migrate from R2 2013 to R2 V3. eStewards is currently on version 4.1, and similar to R2, it is a standard that focuses on electronics recycling, again, an emphasis on managing the data or securing the data on those devices, responsible recycling of those devices and components. eStewards has the environmental health and safety requirements, as well as data security and social accountability. It takes it a little bit further than R2 in some ways. They both follow export of electronics, so there's an international component to both of them, and they each have prerequisite requirements. If you are looking to be R2 V3 certified, you're required to have some of those EHS certifications already in place, such as ISO 14001, 45001, or RIOS, which again covers both of those. eStewards accepts either ISO 14001 or RIOS. So that's a little bit about each of those standards for the EHS department that we are accredited to at this time.
Awesome. Thanks, Austin. We do have a question here regarding, and I think you answered that fairly well with your last little the last little bit you said about, you know, the requirements of having, you know, say 14001 under R2. How obviously the ISO standards, since they're all Annex SL based, they all play pretty nicely together. How would you say the rest of the standards interact with either each other or the other ISO standards?
So you're asking how the R2 and eStewards standards interact with the ISOs. Did I get that right?
Yes. Like how would they integrate? Like, is it a more difficult prospect or is it a simple kind of combination?
Yeah, definitely. So while the format won't be identical, they can all be integrated. And with the prerequisite requirements, we see a lot of clients do that. To be able to meet those prerequisite requirements, they've got the ISO certifications or they've got the RIOS certification. So I would say they're able to be integrated very easily.
All right. Thank you. Mm-hmm. All right. So one of the most common questions we see, and I know I see this a lot and I've heard it reiterated 100 times, when is the deadline to transition for R2 V3? I feel like we've been talking about this transition forever.
Definitely. And I've given one or two webinars on the subject also. So the transition deadline is June 30th, 2023. That is the deadline by which the transition audit must take place. Clients who are pursuing an initial certification to R2 V3 are not subject to this deadline. They can have their audits when they are ready, when they feel prepared. But if a client is transitioning from R2 2013 to R2 V3, they have to have their transition audit completed by that deadline. And you can find information about the transition deadline and what all of that looks like in a series of documents. Series Transition Plan is Advisory 22. You can find it on their website. They also issued Advisory 24 to control the process for virtual transition audits, should they be amenable to both the auditor and the client. PJR put its own transition information together, which can be found on our website, and the transition expectations are further supported in the R2 V3 Code of Practices.
All right, so that's that June 30th of this year date, that's like the drop dead end all be all. If you're not transitioned, then you better
right,
be transitioned.
If you haven't had your transition audit completed by that date, your certificate will be withdrawn, which means you'd have to start over with a new initial certification, a stage one and a stage two, to be R2 V3 certified in the future.
All right, perfect. All right, we've got a question here regarding transitions and new revisions. I know you're not a fortune teller, you don't have a crystal ball, but do you think there might be any other EHS standards that might transition or have new revisions in the near future?
So we're actually in the middle of a transition for eStewards as well. We're transitioning to version 4.1. It's a lot quieter, a lot calmer than the R2 V3 transition has been. So not everyone is even aware of that transition that's going on. That came out 2021, but the transition requirements went into effect in 2022. So we've been just quietly transitioning clients in the background at their next audit following the eStewards transition expectations. It was approached differently than the R2 V3 transition. As far as the ISOs, I can't really say. The 2015 revision for 14001 was quite a bit of time went by. The previous version was ISO 14001 2004. The previous version of ISO 45001 was OSAS 18001 2007. So several years did go by. Like you said, not a fortune teller, I can't say, but I have not heard specifically of revisions coming up. It's always possible. And then RIOS 2016 is fairly new compared to its previous version as well. RIOS 2006 was before that. And again, I haven't heard specifically of any upcoming revisions to that standard either.
All right. Well, we'll keep our eye on the tea leaves and we'll let everyone know if we hear of other transitions coming up. All right. We did get a question here regarding 14001 and 45001. This question reads, what unique key document names would you expect to see in 14001 and 45001? For instance, tables, spreadsheets, such as, for instance, a risk and control table that might include air, water, scrap, trash, electric for 14001.
Good question. And I have to be careful how I answer that to not cross into the world of consulting. I have to firmly stay planted in the auditing side. What I would say, I have a couple things to say about that. So with the revisions for 14001 2015 and 45001 2018, one of the key changes was the terminology around documents and records. They replaced that term with documented information, and they revised the definition essentially to give clients more flexibility with what specifically needed to be documented and maintained as technology changes to encompass the diversity in the industries. Those standards are applicable to such a wide variety of industries that they didn't want to be too specific. I guess they wanted to allow, like I said, some flexibility for the organizations to determine for themselves what is documented and how it's maintained. So when you review the standard verbiage, if it does say documented, that would be a requirement. In other places, you don't see the specific verbiage requiring a given requirement to have a documented procedure, for example, in which case it's up to the organization to determine what needs to be documented. And the other thing that I would say is if you opt to not document certain things, please keep in mind that we're still going to be auditing it. We're going to be looking to see how effective the process is. Sometimes it can be a challenge to audit things that are not documented in that way, where there's not a, like you said in your question, a spreadsheet. You know, show us how you are controlling these requirements. How are you communicating these requirements? How are you monitoring for changes if it's not documented? So while it may not be a specific requirement in the standard and you've got some flexibility, keep in mind that those are still going to be audited and we'll be looking to see how effective the processes are.
All right. Thanks for that answer, Austin. And this goes for any of the questions that we're going to discuss today. If you still have remaining questions or you want some more clarification on something that Austin mentions, please do feel free to send as many follow-up questions as you need. All right. We have a question here about, what would go into the decision between using the ISO standards versus RIOS to satisfy the R2v3 requirements?
I think I actually put together a slide on that question because we've received it so many times. Do you mind if we go through the slide
question? Deck? All right, yeah. Let's put the pin in that question, okay. And we'll see if we have a slide so we can always bring it back up. But for now, let's discuss knowledge resources about R2v3. What do you have on offer? I know we have a range of webinars, we have some white papers, but what else is out there, Austin?
Yep. So at the end of the day, SERI is ultimately the responsible party, the standard holder. They provide training for not only certification body auditors, but consultants, management representatives, internal auditors, people who want to learn more about the standard. They do provide training as well as maintaining their website with an abundance of information. So I like to put all our two clients, kind of nudge them towards that website. There is a plethora of information and they're constantly adding to it. They call their website the knowledge base. You will find Q&As, podcasts, recorded trainings, guidance tools. I'm trying to think what else, a whole host of information. And as they get new questions, as they are seeing different issues in the industry, like I said, they continue to add to it. So I always encourage our two clients or prospective our two clients to familiarize themselves with the website, or feel free to go there when they have a question. There's a search function in the knowledge base and it can spit out a couple different resources that may cover that same topic and help point you in the right direction, in addition to the webinars that PJR provides, as you mentioned, Amy.
Absolutely. We love our webinars here. All right. So a common question that I've seen, and a question that I've often had, because, you know, you hear the term all the time, what exactly is the code of practices for R2 and what's involved in it?
So the R2 code of practices is primarily comprising requirements for the certification body, but since a number of those requirements do flow down to our clients, I recommend getting familiar with that document as well. It is a resource, as I said, for the certification body. It contains requirements to which the certification body and their auditors are held. It has requirements for how to calculate audit time, what appropriate verbiage there is to choose from for an R2v3 scope, everything that needs to be included in an audit package. Let's see what else. Everything that needs to be listed on a certificate. The do's and don'ts of R2 auditing, I would say. So there's some good information for clients in there as well. They can see where that audit time calculation is coming from. They can see where the limitations for scope verbiage are coming from, perhaps which audits can be virtual and which have to be on site. I'm trying to think. There's so much more. I'm probably just touching the tip of the iceberg there, but that in a nutshell is the R2 code of practices.
Awesome. All right, let's go on to the next slide. And I think this is the one you had mentioned that you had put together outlining, yes, Rios versus the ISO options.
I'm sure this is not an all-inclusive list, but to your point, I get that question pretty often as well. So I started compiling some of the common themes for my answers and other answers that I've heard other professionals give as well. So what are some of the differences between Rios and ISO 9001, 14001, and or ISO 45001? We discussed earlier that Rios encompasses those quality, environmental, and health and safety requirements into one standard, whereas ISO 9001 covers quality, 14001 covers environmental, and 45001 covers health and safety. So you would need the three ISO standards in conjunction to cover those same topics compared to Rios. With the prerequisite requirements for R2 and e-stewards, with those EHS certification requirements, we do get this question from time to time. One key difference I've noted is that Rios has an annual membership fee that the ISO standards do not. So when you are doing maybe a cost analysis comparing the audit time for the three standards for ISO compared to the audit time required for Rios, there is often less time associated with the Rios, not always, but often. But you want to factor in that membership fee as well. I can't give you a figure off the top of my head. It depends on how many facilities you have and how many of those facilities are actually processing electronics versus maybe storing electronics, or you know, what their function would be, what their relationship is to one another, how Rios structures their fees. There's a lot of nuances there. But just to throw that concept out in a general sense to be included in your cost analysis. So that second bullet point encompasses what I just verbalized. The audit time often differs as well. Adding the ISO standards together Compared to Rios, there is usually a difference in audit time. The Rios standard is specific to the recycling industry, so I would say it's kind of a no-brainer if you are outside of the realm of recycling or if that's not the least bit relevant to your industry. But where this question most often comes up is for those R2 and E-Stewards prerequisites, which again relate to electronics recycling. So that's not necessarily relevant. I've also received some feedback, which you may or may not agree with, that the ISO standards or the ISO certifications are more widely recognized on a global scale, whereas Rios may not be as well known outside of the US. Again, you may or may not agree with that particular perspective, but it's certainly worth considering for international organizations or clients that do a lot of business with international companies or clients. If it doesn't hold as much weight on a global scale, that may factor into your decision.
All right.
I'm sure there are plenty of other differences.
Yeah. Thanks for explaining. So it kind of sounds like, you know, Rios is sort of like maybe a Swiss Army knife where you have, you know, your nail file, your knife, your corkscrew, but it might not be as applicable as having each of those items separately, correct?
Yeah, potentially, especially if, like I said, you're doing business with clients on an international scale and you want that certification to speak volumes. If Rios isn't recognized, they might be like, oh, cool, that's good for you, but I don't know what that is.
So if I come to a wine tasting with my Swiss Army knife corkscrew, they're not going to respect me so much. All right. Oh, we do have a question here. Let me see. Let me just read through this really quick. It's a bit long. All right. In your experience, what do you see in the field more often, a separate 9001 and 45001 management system with separate procedures, or do you see more of a combined quality and safety management system with blended procedures?
I wonder, and if you don't mind typing in, I wonder if you're referring specifically to electronics recycling or if we're talking about a different type of industry. I think that would be relevant
to our audience member. Please let us know.
General industry.
Yep.
So your question is actually not about Rios compared to ISO. I'm reading it another time. So when we're talking about separate management systems, separate procedures versus, I think what you're actually asking about is an integrated management system. There are pros and cons to having both certifications, but not integrating them, and having an integrated management system. We often see some degree of integration. I think that is more common than having both in one company, both certifications, both standards for the same company in a not integrated way, but we do see both. It depends on a number of factors, including how the organization is structured. If you have a quality manager and a safety manager and they don't work together on their internal audits, their management reviews, their procedures, their documentation structure, it would likely be separate for our audits as well. We wouldn't conduct an integrated audit or provide any integration audit time discounts because we would be looking at those things separately. It is very common to integrate them if that's how the organization operates. There are some benefits as far as I mentioned audit time integration discounts. So if we are doing a combined 9 and 45 audit and they share an internal audit and a management review, if we're able to use auditors that are qualified for both, we don't have to audit those same documents twice, which is where that discount comes in. So again, it's often integrated if your organization has it structured in a way that they overlap quite a bit and you conduct those activities in an integrated manner, it would certainly make sense for us to integrate our audits and have you reap the benefits of that as well.
Hopefully that answered that question thoroughly. Do send a follow up if you had any other additional questions to ask as a follow up. Austin, I wanted to ask you. I know in the ISO world, risk is considered a very big deal, and there's a very specific way it's treated. Are there any differences between how risk is treated in the non-ISO EHS standards and the ISO standards under EHS?
So audit time for ISO is based on risk, employee counts, and a couple of other factors, correct? And even across the ISOs, quality compared to environmental, compared to health and safety, there will be different guidelines for risk that we need to follow. Certain industries or scopes may be higher risk for health and safety, perhaps. They pose a higher risk to the employees doing the work compared to environmental or quality, the potential impact for the environment or, like I said, the quality system itself. So we even see differences in risk across those three standards, and that would be factored into the audit time. R2, I can tell you, R2v3 at least, is not based on risk at all. Audit time is calculated solely based on employee counts, the specific processes that the organization conducts at the respective locations, and the certificate scheme. In other words, how many locations they have, how they interact, and whether they're being certified together or individually. So e-stewards is somewhere in between the two, I would say, where risk is not as much a factor as the ISO audit time calculations, but it is part of the equation compared to R2. And Rios is kind of in its own category, where risk and employee count are relevant, as are some additive factors depending on what they're doing to the electronics. There are some certain higher risk activities, such as electronics shredding, you know, putting materials through a large shredder, that would warrant additional time above and beyond the base audit time calculations used.
So I think what you're saying is R2v3 just loves to be unique out of all the others, right? They love to be special. All right, we've got a question here. Maybe you can speak to this. It does mention IATF, so I'm not sure if your expertise would fully engulf all of this, but maybe you can shed some light. Is it possible to integrate IATF with ISO 9001 and 14001? The person asking this have to do two different and are double audited on the ISO 9001 is what the question says. So any insight, Austin?
I am unfortunately not knowledgeable regarding the IATF standard. Let's see. I want to be helpful,
I will chime in and say our previous office hours webinar that we had hosted was actually with Shannon Craddock, who is our automotive expert, as it were. So if you wanted to go back and review that, that might answer your question there. That is available on our YouTube channel. Or additionally, please feel free to go on pgr.com, go to our contact us page, shoot us the question. We're more than happy to answer that for you outside of the webinar as well.
Yeah, apologies. I would hesitate to give you the wrong answer.
All right. And I'm no IATF expert either, unfortunately. All right. Let's go on to the next question in our slides here. So we hear a lot of fuss about what qualifications do our internal auditors need? Can you give us training? How much training do they need? Do we have to do a certain type of training? So what's the big deal with the internal auditor training, Austin?
Yeah, so there aren't prescribed requirements. Everything is written in a more general sense. So I get this question a lot, absolutely. There's not necessarily a right or a wrong way. We expect that the organization has identified what the competency requirements are for themselves. Since they do vary so much, we're going to start there. What does your procedure say, or what is your process? What are the competency requirements for an internal auditor to make sure that whoever was assigned the internal audit meets those competency requirements? In general, some best practices are to ensure that they have training or work experience relevant to not only internal auditing expectations or the process of internal auditing, but also for the relevant standards being audited. That doesn't necessarily mean they have to take a formal course for each of those standards. There might be plenty of other acceptable methods of training and learning on the job, or again, having relevant work experience. So there aren't prescribed requirements for an internal auditor training that will check all the boxes. However, during our audits, part of our job is to assess the effectiveness of the internal audit process. If we as a certification body are conducting your audit and identify a whole bunch of findings or some significant findings, but the internal audit seemed like a really, a shallow review with no NCRs identified, or several years go by and those internal audits aren't identifying anything. But again, we have our audits and we're seeing nonconformance after nonconformance. We would definitely question the effectiveness of the internal audit that may or may not relate to competency of the internal auditor, but it's certainly one potential root cause in addressing the nonconformity that we might issue that indicates the internal audit process is not effective.
All right, and as a follow-up to that, I'm seeing a question here. So sign off for skills, knowledge and experience works for auditor qualification, and a certificate is not necessarily required.
Correct. So again, we're going to compare what your internal auditors have to your procedure, make sure, or process, whatever the case may be. If you don't have a documented procedure, again, we would be looking to see how you've identified the competency requirements and how you've ensured that those people in those roles meet the competency requirements. And then we're looking at the effectiveness of the audit itself.
All right, great. Moving on. And this might be the slide you referenced that speaks about more about the COP, but how should people know their R2v3 scheme and what appendices are maybe applicable to them?
Right. So we have the same table spelled out or included in our application forms, but it is right in the code of practices as well. So the way SERI has their schemes structured for R2v3 is very different than the schemes we utilize in the ISO standards, and even compared to R2 2013, there are a number of changes. So I do refer people to that table. It contains sort of a description of each scheme and what the requirements would be depending on which scheme you identify with. So it's not so much what scheme you like the best, but which accurately reflects the situation that your organization is in, or the interaction between locations if there is more than one. I get the question sometimes, we want to be a campus. Okay, we have to make sure you meet the definition of a campus before we can utilize that. Otherwise, a lot of clients are falling in the single facility scheme that we see in the first row. So the code of practice table three is a great resource. And again, there's a ton of stuff in the document library as well. Your salesperson, your scheduler may be able to help point you in the right direction, but we've got that right on the application forms. And my contact information is at the end of this presentation as well, should you want to discuss some of the finer points with me directly. The next slide talks more about the appendices. Again, the appendices are not what an organization wants to pick and choose, but what they actually do. We have to be able to audit those activities. They have to be being conducted in real time, not a plan for the future, such as the hope that in the future they'll add testing. We won't have testing in the scope. We won't be applying the testing appendix. It's based on what the organization does. Either they qualify for a given appendix or they don't. So if you are preparing for your audit, those are other good resources.
Yeah, always good to have a ton of resources. And I know we have webinars on the schedule for EHS through the next several months and beyond. Austin, you are a superstar when it comes to giving us consistent and regular webinars on these topics. So appreciation from me, and I'm sure appreciation from all of our clients as well. Let me see here if we've got any other questions that have come in. I'm not seeing any, so I'm going to go ahead and move on to the slide with the contact information. So as Austin said, if you have any, maybe you log out of the webinar and you think of a question at the last second, don't hesitate to reach out. The phone number there is the main PJR phone number at headquarters. So if you call in there and, if you have a question that's maybe not specific to EHS, we can figure out who to get that answer from. And again, at the pjr.com website there on the screen, you can find links to our previously recorded webinars, the slides from previous webinars, as well as the upcoming webinars that you may want to register for. So definitely check those out. Anything to add, Austin, as we wait to see if anyone else has any questions to send in?
I didn't speak specifically to the webinars that we offer for EHS, but we do cycle through a number of different topics. We've covered an overview of the RIO standard. We've covered an overview of the eSteward standard. We have two different R2 V3 webinars in the mix right now. One is just an overview of the standard, and another is the lessons learned and the most common NCRs now that we've been auditing to this standard for going on 2 years, trying to share some of that knowledge, some of those trends. I'm sure there are others. 45001, I believe we provided an overview of as well. So the nice thing is, even if you can't catch them in real time, as Amy said, they're recorded and you can watch them at your convenience. Maybe you want to use it to share with some other employees at your organization if you think it's something that they could benefit from as well. And when it comes to R2, Siri is ultimately the resource. So like I said, I point you to their website as well to learn more and get answers to questions that you might have on that standard.
All right, fantastic. I didn't see any other new questions come through from the audience. So if you're furiously typing, type faster because we're going to wrap things up now. I just want to thank you again, Austin, for taking the time to help me put this webinar together and for answering all of our questions today. And as I said before, if anyone else has other questions, don't hesitate to reach out. We're always here. And I will just wish everyone a happy Friday. Have a good weekend. Stay safe and stay healthy out there. And we'll see you on the next webinar.
Thanks, Amy.